Hi there, my name is Matt Eisenegger and welcome to my podcast CV Focus for ITTHub.net. Over the coming weeks and months, I'll be chatting to key people in the commercial vehicle world about emerging technologies, industry issues and much, much more. Enjoy. So my name is Matthew Eisenegger. Welcome to the CV Focus for the ITTHub.net. We've got our first guest for the podcast, Steve Bridge. Now, Steve heads up the van business for Mercedes-Benz in the UK. Hi, Steve, you okay?
Yeah, I'm good, Matt, thank you.
Excellent. We're living in very strange times at the minute, aren't we, Steve?
Yeah, I guess that would be somewhat of an understatement. Changing rules, changing behaviour, different words being used, such as this is the new normal, all those sorts of things. So, yeah, we've had to be quite fleet of foot, really, to adapt and evolve.
I mean, so I suppose from your perspective, Steve, I mean, obviously, our habits have changed, our shopping habits have changed. I mean, you must have picked up on that within the sort of Mercedes-Benz business, yeah?
Yeah, I think we've always been quite strong in the online delivery market in terms of supplying those people who deliver online, whether it's food, whether it's parcels, whether it's pharmaceuticals or anything in between, even pet food. But what we have noticed, Matt, is a massive increase in demand for, let's say, delivery slots for those customers. And therefore, that has a knock-on effect in the supply chain in terms of us supplying more vehicles. So in many ways, we're sort of grateful for it. But at the same time, it is a change in behavior, as you say, as a result of what's been going on.
I mean, from a manufacturer perspective, I mean, obviously, I think that, I mean, home delivery, I mean, I'm talking really sort of supermarket shopping at the minute. It just, the problems do seem to have eased a little bit with getting delivery slots. But I mean, back in the early days of COVID, you know, I'm talking when we went into lockdown, you know, we were forced to sort of shop online for, you know, for the supermarket shopping. But I mean, how, from a manufacturer perspective, that meant a lot of vehicles out on the road and obviously a lot of support you probably needed to give.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest challenge we had. I mean, we, as a brand, we adopt a mantra, which is about keeping businesses moving anyway. So whether we have a pandemic or not, that is what we exist for. So we supply businesses that supply other businesses or indeed end user consumers. But this polarized it for sure, because as you say, build slots or delivery slots, I should say, were very much in demand. Ocado, as an example, took their website down or their app down because there was just so much demand. So from our point of view, we had to not only keep workshops open within the dealer network, we had to have more people out on the road servicing and repairing at roadside. And I wouldn't say we threw the rule book away, because we clearly wouldn't do that, but we were certainly, let's say, extended a little bit more than we've ever been in the past.
And I mean, obviously, we all, you know, we're all at home. We see supermarket deliveries coming all the time. Now, they do predominantly seem to be on Mercedes-Benz product. Do you have any idea of how much market that you command?
Yeah. It's an interesting question. I mean, in terms of supermarket home delivery, we have 86% share. So give or take, that's around 13,000 of our vehicles running around every day. So I suppose if you looked at it in the cold light of day, every one vehicle that's not on the road is possibly and probably 40, 50 people who are not getting their shopping delivered. So, you know, when you look at it like that, percentages of downtime and uptime are huge. And if you have an 86% share of a market, then you really need to know what you're doing in order to not only extend that share or improve that share, but also to maintain it.
And I mean, obviously you did say that, you, I mean, the dealers by implication had to support that business. Were the dealers sort of embracing into your requirements? I mean, obviously you see it, you get the big picture of the vehicles being out there. You know the demands that you've got, the levels of support you've got to offer. But I mean, obviously, probably for some of the dealers, it would have been easier just because of COVID, just to maybe furlough some of the staff and go down that route. But I mean, obviously, you must have had some sort of lever in a nice way, a nice lever to be able to keep that, you know, keep their businesses working and keep the support level there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very fine balance between, you know, an employer looking at it and saying, well, we need to protect our staff, and at the same time, you know, we have to protect those businesses that put their faith in us. I think that if you looked at, for example, the NHS or any distribution drivers who were trunking for any of the supermarkets, they didn't have much of a choice. We also didn't have much of a choice because we were segmented under the government's banner of transport. So we were, in essence, key workers or essential workers. And we were happy to do that because we felt as though we were making a difference, and that difference is there for all to see. You know, as people were continuing to adopt and embrace the online method, if you will, of shopping. I mean, even my mother, who's 81, sort of got into it, you know, so new customers were coming, different behaviours as well as a result.
I mean, obviously, I suppose the initial sort of service was reaction. You know, we had you were in a position where you had to support that network. But I think all of our habits have changed, haven't we, Steve? Do you think? I mean, we actually quite like shopping online, don't we?
Yeah, I think you know, shopping online is such a diverse thing. You know, you can browse on your phone, your iPad, or your tablet, your machine, your computer, your laptop at any time of day or night, and if you're anything like me, you can buy all sorts of tat, ranging from chainsaws. I did only buy one chainsaw, by the way, but chainsaws through to golf balls and anything in between. So, yeah, you're right. It's quick, it's easy, it's convenient. And I think what a lot of people do now is they sort of shop in reverse as well. So what I mean by that is that they'll order things, try them on, because you can try them on at home as opposed to on the high street where mysteriously you're unable to try them on. And then if they don't fit, you can just send them back. And that in itself is something that the online delivery people have had to deal with, not so much in supermarkets, but more in parcel courier, because of course they've had to deal with returns as well as deliveries. So, you know, I think in the past it was sort of easy language to say that somebody was doing 100 drops a day, as in, you know, parcel drops to people's homes or businesses, but now they're doing 100 drops and 40 collections. So their working day is extending quite significantly as a result.
That was the missing link though, wasn't it, Steve? I mean, you'd order the stuff online and then it didn't fit or you didn't like it, and it was a bit of a hassle either taking it back to the Hermes place or taking it back to the DPD pickup point or whatever. But now, you know, you can just basically leave it on the doorstep and it miraculously disappears and the money's put into your bank. You know, it's almost a seamless process now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it gets slicker and slicker every week, every month, as they develop new systems and processes and new normals, if you will. So I think there is certainly going to be more online than there ever has been.
I was going to ask you where you see the future, where we're going with it. I mean, let's have some green shoots. Like, let's look at some positives. Where, for the industry, what's going to happen?
Well, listen, if I knew the answer to that, I probably, you know, would be a lot more in demand than I am, maybe. I don't know. But I think in terms of online shopping, definitely there's a generational piece here as well. So Generation Y people, millennials, as they're now called, in terms of new people coming into the world, are not going to know anything other than online shopping. I mean, certainly for me, I do a lot of it, and I'm certainly not a millennial. So it will become the new normal for our children and our children's children to do that. You know, probably a cashless society that will exist as a result of that too. You've seen that during the pandemic, even where simple things like the toll on the M6, you know, not accepting cash, only card or toll or tag payment. So if you think about that, that behavior will drive then, let's say, more digital transactions. And then we're into this big piece of work around digitalization and connectivity. And I do actually see the day where if you order certain products from supermarkets, they will know that you need to be replenished with those in a week or so's time. So they'll fill your shopping basket for you virtually. And as you know, that happens now to a degree. They sort of say, this was your shopping basket last week. Do you want the same again? And some fast moving items, you'll just go, yeah, I'll have those. Case in point, perhaps in the past few months was toilet rolls. I mean, everybody was fighting for those. And everything gets delivered in a van, Matt, so within reason. And I think there lies a big piece of work for us and other manufacturers to, how can I put it, to be able to consult and to tailor the solution to make it more efficient and effective for those people that do deliver, rather than just supplying a plain white van and hoping for the best, you know. So that gives us a strength in the market because we've done that for a long, long time. And then the electrification comes in, payload issues around that and so on and so on. So a lot to keep us busy.
I'm going to say from a manufacturer perspective, I mean, obviously, you know, technology is moving at a pace. And it does seem to be, you know, we're seeing manufacturers looking at EV solutions on bigger ranges of vehicles, but it's always been, seems to be the sort of small, you know, the LCVs that have probably been the one that really should be the direct short-term beneficiary of that. One, from the Mercedes-Benz perspective, but two, as an industry, just as an industry overview, how do you see that technology moving and how quick do you see, you know, we're going to be seeing it in sensible volumes?
It moves quick. I think I was talking to somebody the other day. I mean, I've been in this industry since I was 17 and I'm older than that now. So the last major propulsion method or fuel change that I remember was in 1982, 83, when vans sort of seemed to move overnight from petrol power to diesel power. And of course, now if you look at petrol vans, there aren't any. Be very, very rare to find those in Britain. So we move then from diesel to electric, and that's a big jump because everybody wants payload, everybody wants range, or at least the ability to have the range. So range anxiety, I guess they would call it. Even though they might only do 10 miles in a day, they'd still want to do 100 just in case. This means then that we have to accept the fact that delivery methods will need to change, operators' methods will need to change, because of course if we give a longer range, that would generally mean bigger and more powerful batteries, which would probably mean then that the vehicle is heavier, which would probably mean that the payload is less, and therefore there has to be some compromise. Of course, the paradise or nirvana would be to still carry a ton and a half and do 1,000 miles a day if you want to. But that's probably not going to happen. And then in cities, we need to consider that in fact, some operators are doing 100 drops in 7 miles. So why would they ever need a diesel product, if you see what I mean? You know, why would they? So it's an exciting time, but I have to tell you, it's an extremely challenging time because the knowledge gap on electrification is significant. I mean, people talk about AC charging, DC charging. If you were to ask 10 people in our industry to define the difference between AC and DC charging, I reckon 8 would get it wrong. But if you ask 10 people in our industry about diesel and high pressure pumps and such like, I reckon that we're 9 out of 10 would get it right.
Yeah.
So with a big education piece, this then really means, do we teach old dogs new tricks? Well, yeah, of course that's possible. You know, look at me, I'm an old dog. I suppose I have to learn. But at the same time, we've got to bring new talent into the industry that doesn't have preconceived ideas, and people who are, let's say, open to what is best for the client. As opposed to what is best for the manufacturer. And you might find that surprising to hear from me, but I always tend to put the customer first. Sometimes that may or may not be in the best interest of what I do as a manufacturer, but I think it is, because I don't build anything here in the UK. I just sell things. So if I don't put the customer first, then that would be a foolish strategy. So to answer your question in a long way, a long-winded way, it's tough. New people come into market, people like Rivian, for example. There are disruptors. I mean, the car world, Tesla, obvious one. But there still will be a place, I strongly believe, for diesel as well. So it will be an option.
It's not going to go away, is it? You know, I mean,
No.
there are alternative technologies moving at a pace. I mean, electric being one, and probably your friends on the heavier end of the market. You know, we're at the point now where we can have reasonable range with reasonable payload on heavy trucks. You know, task permitting. But I wonder sometimes, you know, we've got electric, not electric technology here and now, but is it going to be an interim technology because of what we've got coming with hydrogen? And that seems to be I mean, that's a topic for another day, but I think there's been more movement across the entire weight sector, light, medium, heavy, in the last sort of 5 years than there has been in the sort of previous 50 years, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody wants to be first, and sometimes, I mean, pioneers are great, but sometimes it's best to watch what other people are doing and the mistakes they may make. I was asked the other day, why have we not been the innovator and the pioneer in bringing, full BEV battery electric vehicle technology to market? And sometimes it is best to watch what other people are doing and let them, as I say, make the mistake. I mean, I could point to 1972, the Munich Olympics. We built a vehicle that was full electric for the 1972 Olympics. Vehicle still on display in our museum. It didn't sell very well because when you open the back of it, it's just full of batteries. So we all remember, or certainly I do, the days of milk floats and Unigate with 3,000 of them, and the Royal Mail operating Scarabs in London for moving parcels around. So you could argue, was electric the fuel of the future in the 70s and we ignored it? Possibly. But battery technology, which is, of course, what you use to store power, wasn't the same back then. So big lead acid batteries, didn't look too clever and they were quite heavy. The battery technology now, in terms of cassettes that you can plug together, plug and play, and give a range capacity of 200 miles or 50 miles, dependent upon the operator, for me is the way forward. And that means that we have to shift our behavior. We have to become consultant sellers as opposed to people who say, right, we built a van for you. Why have you not bought it? It has to be the way around. We have to be, there for the client and consult and build something for them.
Yeah, it's fascinating times. Steve, let's just talk about the here and now. I mean, the how from your perspective, how's that, not necessarily the van market, but the operators of vans, and I'm talking across the board. How are they holding up, and how are they sort of migrating to new technologies? You know, how's the business generally faring, do you think?
Well, I mean, everybody likes to measure the market. I'm not a massive fan of that, much to my boss's displeasure. I mean, market share is vanity, really. It doesn't fill the Asda trolley or whatever for most manufacturers. But in terms of the number of vehicles that we sell, our order intake this year so far is give or take 20% behind where it was at this point last year. Now, considering that February and March as markets, if we were to measure them, we're sort of 80 and 90% down. That's not a bad place to be. And if somebody had have asked me right at the beginning of this pandemic, would I have took a 20% reduction in order intake right there, right then, and folded the cards, I would have said, yeah, I'll take it.
But you've got an interesting stat though, haven't you, Steve? Because I'll let you tell the story because you know what I'm going to ask.
Look, I mean, I for those that know me, and not many people will perhaps on this podcast, I wouldn't necessarily be backward at coming forward. And certainly for 2 months consecutively, in, if I recall, April and May, the Mercedes Sprinter was the best-selling vehicle in the United Kingdom. So it outsold every other model. And I'm not talking just vans, I'm talking cars and obviously trucks. So we beat, for example, the Tesla Model 3, which was the second best seller. And that's only ever been done once before. It was done 36 years ago by our friends at Ford. So records are records, and they're it's to be broken.
Absolutely incredible. Now,
so just picking up on that point, and I think, you know, the loyalty that we have from our client base is what delivered that for us. Because if we were not very good at what we did or what we do, I would imagine that they would have bought something else. So, you know, the gratitude from me to them is there in terms of what we do after market for them, really.
It's fascinating. Now, doing a little bit of Googling about and a little bit of chatting to the people that work within your organisation, I understand you have what you call a business barometer. Now, am I correct in saying that sort of gives you an overview and the sort of state of the market and you know, what's happening out there and the sort of mood of the moment? Is that correct? And if so, can you just sort of give us a few little bit of nuggets, a bit of information, what we can expect to see from that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really lucky. I have a great team that work with me. So I'm not going to claim the credit myself. You know, my head of comms and PR, Caroline, came up with the concept, and it is called the business barometer. And it does that, really. It sort of checks the temperature or the pulse, if you will, of businesses. It's a quarterly study. Give or take 2,000 members of the van community, owners, operators, drivers, that sort of thing. And it's our way of asking them what's happening, you know, in a sort of nicer way than just being a manufacturer and bringing them in for some sort of clinic or whatever. And then we assimilate that feedback, have a look at it, see what's what, and what we can do to assist. And it's not just a case of product-related things. I mean, things like mental health awareness, you know, some of these lads and ladies who are delivering to people's homes. I mean, I have one who comes here, he's from Hermes. He was telling me the other day he had 340 drops in one day.
My word.
That's incredible. Now, okay, he's paid by the parcel, so he's now bought a small island somewhere. but nevertheless, you know, that's a lot of work. He's starting at 6, he's finishing at 10.
Yeah.
And that business barometer really gave us one particular stat, which I was quite taken aback by, really. And it showed that the average driver of a van, this was in May, if I recall, their working week had increased by almost 5 hours during the lockdown, which is 20 hours a month. Now, it might not sound a lot, but they've got families as well, haven't they, you know, to go home to. So they were the unsung heroes, in my view. And that's what the business barometer does. It allows us to, I don't know, have a chat, perhaps, with the entire van community.
Is there anything else, any other nuggets of information in there that you found interesting? I mean, it's really, really important respecting people's mental health. And I think from an industry perspective, it could well be something that's forgotten, but is there anything else out there that you think's worth?
Yeah, there was a nice one in there in the last piece of research we did, which was that 87% of delivery drivers felt that their efforts were appreciated by those customers that they were delivering to, and 27% received a thank you message on social media.
Really?
Yeah, and 21% received a round of applause.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, yeah, we all clap for the NHS and rightly so, but these people were unsung heroes. Mm. So, you know, I think that was a nice piece of research and a nice, you know, sort of thing to look at for us. And it shocked me in a way because, you know, we just treat those people as a necessary evil, don't we?
I was going to say that. But I think, you've got to look at some things coming good out of all this, or people being respected more. And I genuinely think that as consumers, as buyers, you know, it's dead easy to forget the guys, the girls that are driving the vans and the trucks. And we've absolutely... The country would have crumbled if those people weren't in place doing the job. And I think what it's done is brought logistics to the fore, you know, to the front and centre of what's going on, really.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I did a couple of media interviews during the lockdown, and you know, I was conscious of the words that I'm using because of current climate, but the term white van man, for example, and just to be clear to everyone listening, that is the color of the van, clearly.
Yeah.
White van man, that term is massively outdated, because these are not people that just, you know, razz around on the motorway, you know, trying to push you out of lane three. You know, I mean, clearly there are some who would do that, but they're vital workers in our community. And I guess that, you know, we major here on people who deliver things to people's doors, but let's also look at paramedics. They drive ambulances,
yeah,
which are vans.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody was to go up to a paramedic and say, "Oh, you're a white van man," I would imagine that wouldn't go down too well. So why would we possibly say to a Tesco, a DPD, a Cardo, Sainsbury, Iceland driver that you're a white van man driver, a white van man driver? You're not.
Yeah.
You know, you're a key worker. And then there are other hidden realities. Let's just think about those people who are trunking up and down the motorway in heavy trucks and they get a blowout. They're not going to change their own tire.
No.
You know, the tire fitter comes out, and or if they break down, the service 24-hour mechanic
comes out. Putting themselves at quite a great deal of personal risk as well on the hard shoulder.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, we've got lads and ladies doing that job. You know, it's a very diverse business these days. And, you know, they're underneath vehicles at the side of the motorway, as you say, in all weathers. And they are also the unsung heroes. So, you know, I guess it really sort of brings it home to you when you do get chance to think about it like we have done. You know, whereas in the past, it's such a busy world, we never get a chance to think about it.
Yeah.
And we take those people for granted. So that business barometer helps us, I don't know, just thank perhaps those, they're not the buyers in a lot of cases, of course they're not, but they are the influencers. And, you know, they drive our products and we have to look after them.
Yeah, and I think what's important, I mean, for the people that probably hopefully are listening to the podcast that are not from the industry, and obviously social distancing permitting, I do suggest they actually just have a peer through the side window of these home delivery vehicle vans, because you're looking in, it's a whole suite of computers and screens and everything that's basically planning and route planning and giving the correct and best route to the destination. It's absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think the old days perhaps of, you know, just a van with a sliding door. I mean, I remember, you know, CFs and Sherpas and things like that. There was no real creature comforts, was there? You know, the winding up windows and not even a radio perhaps. So, yeah, now connectivity, GPS positioning, proof of delivery. Of course, we take it for granted that you can get a little text message to say that, you know, Matt is 15 minutes away from you and you are drop number 26. We take that for granted.
Yeah.
Well, that tech has to run through the vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I guess that a lot of the, you know, no disrespect meant, but a lot of the general public probably wouldn't need to worry too much about that. You know, I mean,
I don't need to worry.
No, exactly. But we have to put all of that tech in to make it happen.
They just want, the demands are, I want my parcel between 10:30 and 10:45. And probably,
I know,
in the nicest possible way, just that's what they do. They're so used to it, but don't, and they take it for granted, which I suppose, in a perverse way for the industry, it's quite nice, because the service that the industry delivers is so good that we just expect it now. It just shouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah, but it's evolved, Matt. It isn't something that just, you know, we sort of fell into. I mean, I'm quite an unorthodox MD, really. I can't sit still, so sitting in a desk all day is not really for me. So I spent a day as a delivery driver with one of the supermarket home delivery people in London. I spent a day with one of the parcel, well, two actually, of the parcel providers. And I can honestly tell you, it's the hardest I've ever worked. And by the way, I was not driving the vehicle. I was accompanying the driver just to see what they have to do in a day. And it is absolutely shattering. I mean, there's only one 5 o'clock in the day for me, which isn't in the AM. So, I had to be there at that time, and then I was quite excited by the fact that at 2 p.m. the guy said to me, right, okay, this is our last drop. And I thought, oh, perfect, I can go home now. And then he said, oh, no, we don't have to, we're not going home, we're going to go and do collections now. And they do that 7 days, and in some cases longer hours per week. So therefore, Sunday deliveries, which now come for certain parcel carriers, have had to be blended into a working week, because of course nobody can work 7 days a week. So we've then had to consider, or they've had to consider, how to do that and how to double shift and so on and so on. And during that lockdown period, I guess there was a big issue there around social distancing or contamination or whatever. So vehicles had to be disinfected and steering wheels cleaned and all of that stuff. So, tough job, really.
Steve, we've had half an hour, mate. You wouldn't believe it, would you? But listen, thanks so much. Thanks so much for, I suppose, being my first guest on CV Focus for ITT Hub. Wise words, always informative, entertaining.
Matt,
Steve.
listen, I'm privileged that you've asked me to be first. And for all those listening out there, I think we, from a van point of view, just as a community, just need to think that that's what we are. Because, as I said before, going back in the old days, trucks were always the big dog barking. Not on my watch, really.
Been brilliant, mate. Thank you. I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Matt. Thank you.